Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson. Each week we chat to a different guest about how they try and live their life without misery, but we try and do it with a little bit of laughter, because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably.
I'm back. Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I don't know what time it is where you are, but I hope you miss me. If not, oops, sorry, I'm here now. It's kind of not much I can do about that. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast which raises money for Calm, a fantastic charity, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. By talking and sharing our stories, we hope to let each other know we can get through the shit bits and that hopefully things won't be that way forever. We're all in the same boat, a big old mental health boat, but not as lonely when you're sailing in it together. This week's guest is Catherine Bohart. Catherine is a fantastic comedian whose show Lemon is touring next year, so be sure to check her out at a venue near you. We'll chat to Catherine about OCD, perfectionism and toilets. Yep, you can tell I'm back. I managed to steer the conversation straight back into the gutter. Sorry, Aaron. Enjoy!
Hi.
No. You've got to start with a hello.
Hello. Welcome to today's episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably. We are joined today by the fantastic Catherine Bohart.
Hello. How are we?
Catherine is an angel in my family. My dad loves Catherine.
I love your dad.
He comes to her previews alone.
I love him so much. Once I asked him a question and he was in my front row and he said, "Oh no, I'm sorry. The thing is, you know my daughter." I was like, what a compelling response, but also way to shut me down. Brilliant. It was like, don't fucking ask me a question. She's gorgeous.
I am immune from this.
I love him so much. He's a sweet baby angel.
So sweet.
He is.
We're going to have to get your parents on this podcast at some point.
You
just mentioned them all the time.
On.
Yes.
Yeah.
You should get both of them on. Do you know what it is? They're infectious in terms of like, they are so uplifting. They fundamentally fully believe and have every conviction in Lauren's talent. That is like, that bleeds out. So they just just like, if they believe in you, you kind of start to believe in yourself. Yeah. You're like, oh, okay, well, he's coming to the shows. I must be all right then.
He's wonderful. We saw you just maybe like 2 weeks before Edinburgh, didn't we?
And he honestly
And I could tell that you were like stressed. And my dad just gave you like a pep talk.
He did.
And I was like, this is amazing. And my honestly, dad needs to come work in comedy.
If I had known what he was going to say, I would have recorded it just to have play it before shows. He's amazing. Big fan. Here I am. I love your dad.
I feel like maybe we have the answer to our first question. I was going to ask, when was the last time you felt calm? And I have a
when
feeling it's going
to
be
your father's
talking
eyes.
To Alan.
And he's soothed me. God, imagine if that was the last time I felt calm. That was months ago. When is the last time I felt calm? You know what? Yesterday, and it's something that I don't get to do very often, but because of the work that we do. Mm-hmm. But I was home and able to cook dinner. And cooking for me is such a way to get out of my head and a way to calm myself and clear my day. So I made a stir fry, which is very basic, but I like chopping veg and being over my pants. I feel like myself. And also I feel like there's nothing else I'm supposed to be doing. Does that make sense? It's not like I could be multitasking because I can't be on the phone while I'm making loads of noise and I can't be doing admin while I chop veg. So it's like a nice way for my brain to go, you're supposed to do this, you have to eat. Mm-hmm. And it's good to be cooking it for yourself. So yeah, that's probably when I felt calm.
That's a good one. Well, there's something about cooking that I think is quite therapeutic. And especially if you do a job like this where maybe you go for a few days without having a proper meal.
Yes.
To suddenly be in your kitchen and just be like, I made a fucking brilliant pie the other day.
I believe you. Yeah. I believe you.
Didn't do the pastry, so not quite ready for bake-off.
That's fine.
The filling was smashing.
What was in it?
It was chicken. It was called a surfer's pie.
Okay.
I don't know what was surfy about it, because it had chicken in it, and that's not from the sea.
does it have a lid?
Yeah, it had maybe the lid, but it had surfing. Like Thai green curry paste.
Wow.
And like Thai fish sauce, which I didn't know was a thing. And I stood like a frightened rabbit in the international foods aisle, just like, which one is the fish sauce? maybe that might be, surely fish sauce isn't enough to make it a surfer's pie.
I don't know. You can do anything you want these days. I don't know. It's a modern world we live in, Lauren. Maybe that's enough.
What's your go-to dish, like your comfort food?
It's a very good question. I make a good lentil bolognese. That's very comforting. Mm. I love it, and it makes me feel like everything's going to be okay. But actually, my most like regular dish that I make is I make homemade beans, usually at the start of the week, and they do us for the rest of the week. I love baked beans, and I love making them myself. And also,
did not know you could do that.
Yeah, oh my God. So literally, as you say that, my girlfriend was like, Sarah Keyworth, who you know, so I don't know why I'm saying my girlfriend. Truly, the first time I made it was like, wait, what? Sorry, what? It's like, yeah, they don't grow out in cans. Like, what are you talking about? And she was like, oh, I didn't know. Huh. No, so
it's a very good impression of Sarah.
Thank you. So
we have her on the podcast at some point, listeners, and you will be able to compare.
But it means that I love making them, we love eating them, but also every single time her tiny mind is blown. So that's exciting.
What's yours?
My girl, paella.
Oh, that's
Sarah's.
I would say that's
really good paella.
That's Sarah's. Yeah. That's so good.
I think that would be mine as well, actually.
Yeah. And it's like, you feel good because it's got veggies in it, but in like a sneaky way. So you feel good because you're... By sneaky,
it's
I just
true.
Mean chopped up small. Yeah. And it's like that kind of nice, warm... Oh, I love it. And it reminds us of holiday. It was probably the first kind of like exotic food I'd had on holiday.
Yeah.
And I remember being a kid and being like, I am so cultured. Oh my God.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to tell all the kids when I get home from my package holiday.
And really, it's just posh fried rice, right?
Yeah.
But I love it so much.
So good.
Such a good shout.
Yeah.
Also, you can make it beautiful. It always looks like such a like an extravagant
little
meal.
Little slices of lemon on it. Just like, it check me out.
I know. It's so fancy. So fancy. I mean, I love baking, but I never have time to bake. But that is one of the, that's very therapeutic as well. I really enjoy it.
When was the first time you became aware of mental health being a thing, be it positive or negative?
Ooh. I mean, I suppose there was a lot more chat around it come end of school exams. That's probably the first time it was really presented as something that could be affected by external factors and could be something that you could vocalise or verbalise or could impact your behaviour or mood. But I think, so when I did my equivalent of A-levels, because in Ireland we do the Leaving Cert, suddenly it was like... Also, it turns out when you make children decide exactly what they're going to do for the rest of their lives and then sign their initials on the end of a paper that says, that's your decision made. And then you put them in rooms of incredibly pressurized scenarios for 2 to 3 hours and say, your whole life is dependent on what happens here. It actually can be quite, call me crazy, stressful. And so suddenly they were, I mean, they weren't changing any of those factors, mm-hmm. but they were at least discussing that that might stress a kid out.
Yeah.
And so that's probably the first time. But I would say that I am a perfectionist and found school quite easy. Academically speaking, I didn't love school socially maybe as much, but I loved the learning part and I found it all came very easily to me. So actually, I got through that quite without a huge amount of stress. I mean, I definitely did things that were problematic, like stay up all night the night before exams and stuff, but only because I knew I could do that, get a good mark, and then probably not have done enough work during the year. So I think that was probably the first time that I was aware of it. The first time it ever impacted me was probably later than that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And how did it impact you later on?
Yeah, sorry, that wasn't meant to be a cliffhanger.
No, it was just like, oh, I'm so intrigued.
So I did very well at school, went to a good university, and did not do well at university. I completely floundered. I was not good out of a routine setting where you were supposed to take responsibility for your own learning and where there weren't constant checkups and check-ins and where you weren't being spoon-fed things to memorize. I was suddenly like, what do you mean we have to go find it out by ourselves and be our own motivators? Because to me then there were fewer indicators that I was getting things right and I needed to be told I was right and getting things right and doing the right thing. So when I was in my final year of university, having not had a good time for all 4 years of being there, I was incredibly unwell. And initially, in third year, I was diagnosed with clinical depression, which was true, but not the whole story. And then I stopped eating, really. And so I thought I had an eating disorder and asked my mom for help. And she very kindly got me in to a very good psychologist in Ireland who was like, it's not an eating disorder and it's not clinical depression. Well, it is disordered eating and you are depressed, but they are caused by a greater problem. So I have OCD, but I didn't know I had OCD. Mm. I mean, when they said it, I was like, you know what? It makes sense.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. I see how you got there. You don't have to show any more workings. I get it. I didn't know that until I was 23.
Oh, right.
Which is actually quite a long time to get into habits and coping mechanisms to assume things are your personality rather than a problem.
Yeah, indeed.
Especially with OCD, because I think a lot of it can be quite it's not positive, but it is rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
So being, in my case, thin, socially rewarded, being academically successful, socially rewarded, being a workaholic, socially rewarded. So despite the fact that those things were inhibiting me, and also when I wasn't doing those, I was non-functioning. So yeah. I was very good at outwardly projecting those things and not them not necessarily being true. Have I gone on a tangent?
No, not at all. Okay. This whole podcast is based on tangents.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, so I have OCD and that's when I figured it out. But then I'm probably being unfair insofar as discussions around mental health were definitely things that we had in my house. And my mom was very open to us being a counsellor or a therapist if we needed to. But I think it was probably the most overwhelming experience I had of mental health, both because I was unwell, but also because I was suddenly talking to a lot of medical health professionals. And I ended up in a hospital program for 4 months, which is like the very deep end of mental health treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sort of got spat out at the end of that and went to drama school, which is not as dissimilar to a mental health treatment facility as you would think that it should be. But it was sort of like a blur. And then I had to kind of go, okay, how am I going to function on a day-to-day basis from here on out? So then I guess I had to get a therapist here when I moved to London when I came to drama school. But I was out of my parents' care and out of a systems care and suddenly had to remember that like it costs money to go to a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs time and you have to take that time off work because I don't work on weekends or whatever it might be. What a long way to answer your question.
No,
loved it.
When I saw your show last year, I didn't realise how little I knew about OCD until I saw your show and I was like, not that I thought I was a bloody OCD expert, but I remember sitting and being like, oh, there's so much more to that than the whole stereotype of like, I like all my tins to face the same way. Like,
I'm really glad you said that. Yeah. I think that's so true. I think it's understandable that you thought that you knew lots about it or at least sufficient about it because it's not something that's it is represented. It's weird. It's represented and it's talked about, but in a very limited manner.
Yes, yep. Definitely.
So people definitely think they know it's the washing hands one, and washing hands that much seems bad. And that's what they know, mm-hmm. right? Or that we really like stuff to be tidy. When actually there's 7 clinical types, or at least there were when I was first hospitalised, there may well be more, of OCD, and they're very different to one another. So hoarding is a form of OCD. Yeah, which people, I don't think, which is the opposite end of the spectrum of what people expect OCD to be. And the type that I have is, like, sometimes people think that they have to do, a lot of it's tied to religion for some people, so the notion that they have to be good or bad based on an external measure of that, and that's what leads to their compulsions. In my case, it's perfectionism, so it's about order and symmetry to a large degree, and duty and not engaging, London, not being seen as a failure, right? So those are all tied together. But it's not just like, I mean, yes, don't get me wrong, I love when things are lined up straight. Oh God, gorgeous. And that was definitely the overwhelming compulsive action, mm-hmm. was to fix the external so as that I could think straight. It never worked, by the way, because that's how OCD works. You line something up straight and then there's something else.
Yeah.
Or it's never straight or whatever it is. It's not a singular form of an illness that people identify it as. Also, it's like people, I think they know what it is, but they also think they know how to make it better. So for example, which I think is a real problem, mm-hmm. is people will often be like, oh, I cleaned before you came.
Right, yeah.
Or she loves tidying.
Yeah.
I've always had to live in house shares because I'm poor. And people will always, one of my housemates will always decide, Catherine just loves cleaning. And it's like, no. Let's be clear. That would be like saying your depressed friend just loves sleeping. Like, it's like, no. To what degree is she doing it? Yes. And to what degree are you taking the piss and letting her do it because you've decided that's better? So it's like, don't tell your friend with OCD that you tidied for her to get there, because she needs to, like, it needs to be okay if you didn't.
Yeah.
Is the point. But yeah, people really think they know what to do. Another habit people have is like, people will go, oh God, it must really annoy you that X is happening. So say in this room that, like, you'd be like, oh, it must be really annoying you that Lauren's things are on the ground. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, it wasn't until you said
brought
that.
To my attention.
But also, even if it is, maybe I'm making the micro decision at all points to try to deal with that and breathe and think that, like, I don't know, having brain space is more important than and thinking about that, so mm-hmm. why would you mention it to me?
Exactly.
Oh, it's just, also, I think people don't think it's that serious. That mm-hmm. was the real thing.
That's the weird, because it became such a comedy trope, didn't it, for a while, that, and then became this kind of weird thing in the English lexicon of just being tidy, neat, and all that mm-hmm. sort of things, and being
I'm
kind of diminished.
Yeah. How annoying is the phrase, a little bit OCD?
Oh, yeah. I got a 10 on that in comedy, because I just think it's so frustrating. You would never say, you're just like a little bit anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little bit manic depressive.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what? It's just bizarre. But I think an awful lot of people don't take it seriously, and I think in that show when I talked about the fact that I almost died from it, mm-hmm. as a lot of people do, in fact not almost, a lot of people do die from it, and the statistics on people with OCD who die from suicide, who die from a lack of self-care because they can't care for themselves, who the number of them being unemployed or having broken marriages is significantly higher than anybody, like, than other people without it. What a fun fact, guys.
Yeah.
My point is a series, and I remember in that show there would always be a point at which I would kind of lay out the severity of it.
Yeah.
And it would be like, oh, people would just go, oh, and I mean, it was a weird mixed bag where people were like, why is she talking about this? It's a comedy show. Or, oh, I didn't know it was that serious. Or, oh, we should probably stop making fun of our friend Mark. Or whoever, like, whatever the moment of it was that people would have a realization. But I think it was quite important for me in that show to say it is serious.
Oh, definitely.
If I'm going to tackle it.
When you mentioned going to hospital for it. And there was a moment when I sat and I was like, I'd never thought it would be something you'd be hospitalized for. Yeah. And then I was like, it's a mental illness, of course. Like, of course. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know, I really like that. I mean, I'm sorry that you had a horrible time, but I'm glad that you spoke about it.
But also, I was I kind of struggle with the idea that I had a horrible time insofar as, yes, it was awful. And yes, it's a very debilitating illness. But I had parents who believed doctors when they said that I had it. Mm-hmm. I had medical support and I had care, and my parents had health insurance, which meant that I got that hospitalization and care. Like, in many ways, I was very, very lucky. Mm. And I felt like I had a relationship with my mother where I could say, I'm drowning, can you help me? Mm-hmm. Which led to any diagnosis in the first place. So I don't know, I feel quite lucky. I feel like had I been me 60 years ago, yeah. I'd probably have died in a hospital from nerves. Or if I maybe didn't have that same relationship with my parents, or if I wasn't raised in a home where they had enough money to have healthcare. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think I'm quite lucky. Mm. But also as this particular government slashes any support for the NHS, I'm like, the access to medical care that I had was important. And yeah, I definitely don't want to take it for granted.
Mm. I'm on several waiting lists at the moment. It's all terribly boring.
It's atrocious.
Yeah, it's vile.
It's atrocious. And I think that's also, mental health is like the easiest thing to cut, right? Because of what we were just saying, nobody takes it seriously, but like it's just still not treated like you broke your leg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it can be as much, if not more, of an emergency.
It's like when it was Mental Health Awareness Day the other day. I know this isn't going to go out when it was the other day, but it was the other day. And obviously there's so many people saying that, you know, it's important to talk and to reach out for help. And of course it is. But the amount of people I was seeing posting it who maybe haven't been through the system, and I was like, I don't think you understand that that is I think the way they were wording it was obviously so helpful, and I know they got the right intentions, but it seemed to be that they thought, you reach out, you ask for help, done.
Oh yeah.
And I had to like bite my tongue a few times because I was like, I know you've got the best intentions and it is so important to reach out and ask for help, but I also think it's important for people who've been through that system to be like, but I still need your help from that point I've reached out and asked for help, because that is step one on an incredibly long journey. And it's like your mates being like, oh, you need to talk, and it's like, oh well, I have asked for help, cool, brilliant, bye. And it's like, no, I need you more than ever now. Like, yeah. I really need you now to wait with me for the next 8 months.
Exactly. People always have asked me, maybe because I did a show about mental health, like, what's your advice for when people are going? And it's keep asking for help. Mm-hmm. That is like, I think that's much more important advice, because that's what you have to do. You have to ask for help by making a doctor's appointment, ask for help at the doctor's appointment, maybe ask for help at another doctor's appointment, maybe have to see another doctor, at which point you have to go on a waiting list, during which time you have to have friends support you or family support you. And then the waiting list might not come around as quickly as you need it to, in which case maybe you need to ask for private help, in which case maybe you need to ask for financial help, in which case maybe you get after your 6 weeks or 8 weeks or however many months you wait for, it's not the right doctor for you. Like, oh, but hey, extra bonus prize, you get to go back on the waiting list. But there's positives there, right? The first time you ask is always going to be the hardest.
Yes.
It doesn't, however, mean that it's going to be the best response or that you're going to tell the right person, because people are disappointing in a multitude of ways. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just keep asking, I think, is the advice I would have.
Yeah, indeed.
It's unsolicited advice. There you go.
I think it can be disheartening, say, if you do reach out for help. I remember bottling stuff up at uni for a long time and eventually reaching the point where I was like, I don't think something's right. And I went to talk to a lecturer. I broke down in an office probably this size. And she looked me in the eye and went, maybe you need to manage your time better. And I sat there and I thought, I'm clearly in distress and I have poured my heart out. You know, I've not been turning up to classes and you know, I've not been the same Lauren. Shirley, you can see something's up. And that then put me off asking for help for a while. So I totally get how disheartening it must be if you get a knockback or if it's not the right person. But like you say, like, that makes it all the more important to be like, no, keep at it, keep asking.
Yep.
Because otherwise, you might wait 2 more years to ask for help and be in a lot worse position by then. Yeah. Like,
and I try to have some compassion. I mean, I try to assume that the reason people are not great when you tell them is for a reason. Like, maybe they have their own stuff going on. You know, not everybody is like clued in on mental health or any kind of medical professional or necessarily has the time or emotional capacity to support you. But I think if you find yourself in a situation where someone tells you that and you can't, at least try to point them in the right direction towards someone who can, and be appreciative of the fact that they told you. So you don't have to take it on. I know that people are like, well, you don't just get to burden me. And I get that, right? But like, there should be some like, well done for saying it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know who would be better at this than me?
Yes.
My dad's really good at that, where he'll be like, I mean, he's such an incredible listener, but he doesn't necessarily always have the answers or solutions, nor should he, right? He's not a doctor and he's like, but he's very good at going, you know what your next step should be if he can't do it for me.
Yeah, and it's making really sure that those next steps are available as well. And just like you say, like, maybe I'm not the right person to talk to, but go talk to them or go talk to Calm or the Samaritans because they'll have more advice or... Yeah. Go speak to your GP, obviously, and stuff like that. It's making sure that after that point of awareness where you realise that there is something wrong, that there's somewhere to go, that you don't get stuck in that there's something wrong stage, which can happen.
And acknowledging that it is brave of them to tell you.
Oh,
absolutely.
It's like when we had Cariad Lloyd on, she said obviously she likes to help as much as she can, but sometimes she'll get messages when she just can't deal with it, but she'll be like, here are other numbers for other people who can help you more than I can right now. And I'm like, that's such an important... I've done it with mates, where I've been a little bit like, I appreciate this is really awful for you, but I'm also dealing with my own stuff, so thank you for opening up to me, but maybe you need to ring this person, or maybe you need to do this, or maybe you need to do that, and then maybe I'll check in again in a couple of weeks when I'm feeling better and being like, just checking everything's okay.
Yeah, but it's better to be honest and just say, I think in one of those situations, like I'm not in a very good place at the moment, so I'm pretty sure I won't be able to give you advice that you should be taking, and if I did, it would be very hypocritical because I'm not doing that advice.
I felt really bad the other day. Someone sent this message on Facebook, a friend, and I thought they were asking for mental health advice, and I was feeling really down at the time, and I was like, oh my god, like I feel exactly the same, oh my god, so weird that you've reached out. And I poured my heart out, and then I reread the message, and he'd asked for advice on getting representation or like getting an agent, and I had just completely misread it and like poured my heart out about how stressed.
Had you pressed send?
Yes.
Oh no.
That's a massive essay of a message when I was just like oversharing and like, you know, it's fine, I feel the same, and trying to give advice but also like saying how bad I felt. And then I was like, I've just read your original question. My agent is not taken on at the minute. But but then bless him, he replied. He was like, I totally know that's not what I asked, but I actually feel a bit like this too. And it's really glad, I'm really like glad to know that it's not just me. And I was like, I'm glad we've inadvertently helped each other. Good luck on your quest for an agent.
But I do feel like maybe that tells you something, right? Like if that was your like, oh, thank God, somebody finally, just, at the very least it can tell you, maybe you need to have those conversations and that's okay, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
When other people ask me for help, partly it's sometimes depending on my own headspace, but also like trying to be aware of like maybe somebody's not help asking for help, or like, but being around certain things and certain conversations are likely to, and I want a better word, but I'm going to say this word because I don't have another one, like to trigger anxieties in me. For example, I have tried to shut, I've gotten quite good at just shutting them down, right, rather than like cutting people out of my life, but like to shut down conversations around like weight loss, obsessions around calories and food. Not in a like, I mean, obviously someone, I'm not like, if anyone mentions food, I'm like, don't you speak to me. Like, not at all. Not at all. But like, if people are constantly talking about the need to lose weight and say, I think I'm getting better at being like, I find this really like harmful.
Yeah.
And I hope you don't mind, but would you mind if we stop talking about calories because it upsets me? And that is a very like apologetic way of doing it. I want to get to a place where I can articulate what I mean better, but mm-hmm. it's okay sometimes to protect yourself as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a balancing act.
So I put a picture on Instagram the other day of like fresh as week, and I know I was far too thin and fresh as like far too thin. So when I uploaded the picture just to be like, haha, look at me in fresh as week 7 years ago. But I made a point of saying like, don't tell me I looked good here, because like I know I was.
Yeah.
Or I don't think I said don't tell me I look good, but I said I know I was too thin here, and I had 7 years of festival wristbands on.
Yeah.
I was like, and I needed to cut those wristbands off, and it was just a nice little post about like looking back retrospectively. And the first thing I did was someone comment being like, don't be so hard on yourself. I think you look amazing. And I replied, and I was like, I wasn't saying that as a like, give me a compliment. I was saying that as like, look at me, I was 18 years old and like a child's body, like so thin. But obviously when girls put pictures on Instagram, there's that classic thing of girls being like, oh my God, you look amazing, hun. You look amazing. So I kind of wanted to try and protect myself by being like, don't tell me I looked good there. Because I don't want that thought in my head to someone be like, oh, you looked amazing. And then be like, oh, do I need to weigh 6 stone again? Like, oh.
That's the thing. And I feel like our instant reaction when people lose weight is to be like, oh my God, you've lost weight. You look amazing. I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. I really, really, really tried to stop myself commenting when other people lose weight because I have no idea why they lost weight. Maybe they're having a bad time. Maybe they're sad. Maybe they wanted to. Maybe it was effortful, but maybe it was. So I tried to just stop it, mainly though, because I feel like when I verbalize the, oh, you look great because you lost weight effectively, I'm telling them, A, that's the better way to be. You look better than you did before because there's less of you. And B, I'm telling myself the goal is weight loss.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to stop.
Yeah.
When it's hard, but I'm trying.
My first ever Edinburgh, I went up and I weighed 16 stone in July, came back in September and I was just over 12.
That is an Edinburgh.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just worked, didn't
That's
eat,
a stone
smoked.
A week.
Yeah. It was God. Horrendous because I just didn't eat and I just like, I was just smoking and drinking and that was it. And when I got back,
That's
people.
Awful.
I was grey and I was just like, I got back and my mum didn't recognise who I was. I walked past her in the pub and she didn't know who I was. And then people started saying, oh, you look so good for it. You look great for it. And I was so ill. I wasn't eating. I would go days without eating.
Yeah.
And I just like, but people were saying, you look really nice. And like girls were then interested in me, which hadn't been interested in me before. And it was like, it became a drug to stay that gross.
Totally.
And then I was diagnosed with like gout and arthritis and all these different things.
Oh my God.
Is gout still a disease?
It most certainly is.
I thought you
better believe it.
Three times, baby.
No.
I thought it was one of these old-timey things, like scurvy.
I think I was the youngest person in Herefordshire to be diagnosed with gout.
Yeah.
What were you living off? Like pheasant and beer?
Just beer. I was occasionally like dry toast and that was it.
God, look at old gouty Gillis over there.
That's crazy.
And it was only till like I got to that point where I was like, oh, actually my body's falling apart. Yeah. It's like, I actually need to start eating properly. But it is, it's like you just get obsessed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just so gross.
Well, I couldn't think about anything else. Mm. That was the main thing. People would tell me how amazing I was, but also I didn't have any other headspace. Mm-hmm. When I'm in that cycle, that's all I can think about is food, weight loss, punishment.
Mm.
Exercise is always punitive. Starvation's always punitive. And then there's like binge and guilt and on it goes. But it's like you don't have any headspace for anything else. Like you can't be a creative or functioning person for any real significant length of time because you're just boring and sad, obviously. But mainly it's just so boring. I just don't want to go back there.
No.
So
no,
I have to be quite good about putting up boundaries about it.
It's just looking after yourself, isn't it? It's just it is self-care,
But I really try with other people not to be to comment on their bodies. Because I'm like, it's not my body. It's not my business. Just mind your business.
As long as you're happy, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah,
that's the important thing.
Yeah.
Going back to that, because you said that your OCD is steeped in perfection.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, so if you aim for something and you don't achieve that goal, what then happens? Do you just spiral or is there have you now learned to kind of bring yourself back from that?
That's a very good question and I think I'm still learning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think I'm still learning. And I don't think that's just OCD. I think that's a woman thing, partly. I do think it's gendered. We don't give women as much space to fail, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they're necessarily allowed to try things and then fail as often. For example, I was reading something, Melissa McCarthy was talking about how she thinks it's really important for girls to play sports just because it's important to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And then win another day and then lose another day. And it's just about being outplayed. And I didn't. And I think it's quite a good, an interesting metric to be I just think, and maybe it's not as gendered as I'm portraying it, but I do think we strive for perfection, especially when we're the only women in fields as well a lot of the time. Anyway, I think it is OCD related, but not exclusively is what I mean to say. And I am still learning to fail and reward myself for trying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a deeply uncomfortable spot that I don't enjoy. And and I'm still working on it. It definitely brings up a lot of negativity in me. Partly it's the OCD spiral that I have to resist. Partly it's like it makes me quite like shame ridden and quite anxious and quite jealous. I feel like increasingly I'm able to go, if I'm jealous of something or if I'm ashamed about not achieving something, what's the underlying want there? How very CBT of me, but like what is the underlying want? And usually I find with jealousy it's not like I don't like the person or the person's bad, it's that they have something I want and that tells me something and that's interesting. Right, then I could just be like, oh, cool, that's an indicator of my ambitions rather than a reflection on them, which I am working on.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm on my sixth existential crisis of the episode at this point, to be honest. So relating to so much of this stuff. Yeah.
All the perfectionism stuff is like looking in a mirror. Because I've said this before, I think people who are perfectionists as children in school go on to be incredibly anxious adults because you succeed within a framework, which is easy to, well, not easy, but if you're academic, it's very easy. You know what you've got to do. You know how to do it. I have to do this, this and this. I'll get this grade. I'll do this. And then suddenly you find yourself in the real world and you're like, there are no frameworks.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes.
And because I'm not used to failing as a child, I was smart, I was an A-star student or that kind of thing. I get, even as an adult, I get this embarrassment. It's embarrassment if I fail. And I feel like I'm back to being 10 years old again and I go red and I feel like I'm going to cry and I'm an adult. I shouldn't cry if I fail at something. And I know some people might look and be like, oh, it's because she really wanted it and didn't get it. Oh, that's really sad. And it's like, no, it's because I'm so embarrassed that I failed, which is daft. I'm an adult.
It's so problematic and I completely agree with you. The overwhelming shame of publicly putting yourself out for something like and saying like, I'm going to, by trying this, I want this, which is so ridiculous as well because we have chosen a career in which failure is compulsory. It's absolutely compulsory. Like you can do the same set in front of the same, in the same room, in front of a different crowd, and one night you can absolutely smash it and another night they'll be like, why would you do this? What is wrong with you?
You have brought shame to our town.
Truly. What were you thinking? Like, did someone encourage you? What is happening here? And so
get Lauren's dad on the phone immediately.
Alan needs to know.
But I was leaving a gig at the weekend and there'd been compare and I'd open, so I know it was probably in relation to me, and as I was leaving I heard this guy say, fucking hell, how much did we pay to get in here? And I was like, that was probably about me. You feel your little cheeks burn and there's a comic, Scott Bennett, who's wonderful. He's got a tip where he puts a bobble hat on. And so at any gig where you have to leave through the crowd, he'll put his bobble hat on so people don't recognise that it's him.
It's such a good shout. But the things I've heard people say about my sets in bathrooms there after
have been
debilitating. And actually, I actually credit comedy, I say this, like with a lot of teaching me how to fail and teaching me the joy of it and like and the learning from it that I definitely wasn't willing to embrace beforehand because it is compulsory. You do have to. There's no opt-out of failure.
Oh, there's so many knockbacks.
As a kid, I never tried anything I wasn't naturally good at.
Oh, yeah.
That was definitely...
Why would you want to do anything? You're going to lose it.
No. Exactly. Oh, I'm not immediately the best? No, I think I'll leave it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real... So I'm trying to make myself do a few more things that I'm not the best at. From the outset, just to keep reminding myself you can learn things.
Exactly.
Or not have to be the best and still enjoy them. Yep. What?
Yep.
I know.
We've only just started, me and Matt, when we go bowling, having the bumpers down. Because I cannot... What's the point of going bowling if the ball's just going to go down the bumpers? No, it's not fun. And the first couple of times me and Matt went bowling, I cried because every ball went down the gutter.
Yeah.
And like he was like, why are you getting upset? And I was like, because I'm bad at bowling. And he was like, you are not a child.
And also you don't want to be the world's best bowler.
Yeah. I was like, it's like, I want to be a champion. I was like, but I've paid £6 and all my balls are in the gutter. And then I went the other day for another comic, Joe Sutherland's birthday, and they had the bumpers down and I was freaking out and I was like, I don't want to be the loser who asked for the bumpers up. Oh my God, I got a fucking strike. Bumpers down all the time in future, please.
But also, what's the worst case scenario? You lose at bowling at an adult's birthday party.
That is true. That is true.
All of whom probably were comedians, right? So their job is to like find things funny.
Yeah exactly.
But I completely understand. I would have also been like, I'll just give the bowling a miss. Yeah. I'll get the drinks
I'll
in.
Just got the bowling.
Time for a game, I think.
Time for my game.
Is that the new theme tune?
Do need a jingle for
I liked it. I really liked it. I thought it was a thing.
Ah, right. This is a good one, but I don't know if it's a good one to ask someone with OCD, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
go on.
Which I don't know if it's...
By the way, I'm largely well, so yeah. You go ahead. I should have stressed. Imagine if I'd come in and been like, I'm not well.
Yes.
This whole room is a nightmare.
This is one that Matt actually contributed. So,
okay.
Thank you for your contribution, Matt.
Thank you,
which
Matt.
Which I hadn't thought of. As in, so it's like an anxiety would you rather. I would never have thought of this one, but when he suggested it, I was like, oh, actually, this is something I do. Would you rather use a public toilet with no lock or just not go to the toilet?
Not go to the toilet.
Yeah.
How badly do I need to go to the toilet?
Mm.
I mean, I said it. I don't know. I was just
you
trying
to... You can probably hold it, but it's going to be uncomfortable.
I'll hold it.
Nah, I'd rather not go.
But to be honest with you, you had me a public toilet.
Yeah.
So the lock to me is kind of irrelevant. I would rather hold it most situations. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting better.
Yeah.
I'm getting better. I just build my little prison seat. God, what a middle class girl thing to say. As if I know anything about prison. Yeah, I just put my little, I do think of the trees that I'm killing as mm-hmm. I build my saddle for the public toilet. What a terribly long answer. I should have just stuck with hold it, but I've exposed myself instead.
Mm-hmm. I can't there go on train toilets.
No, absolutely not.
And even though they've got a lock, no. I don't trust them.
Either don't trust the door. Door's going to open.
Like stars in their eyes. Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be having a shit. Like,
no. I completely agree. Those are horrific.
Yeah, yeah,
horrific. Why would anybody create that situation? Mm. Awful. Oh, and it's the slow pace with which they open. Can you imagine like knowing it was going to happen? But it's not enough time to really do yourself up.
Yeah.
But, oh, absolutely.
So then you've just got to make a scene of it, really, haven't you?
Exactly.
Oh, God. No, absolutely not. That's the stuff of nightmares.
Yeah. And children are really bad for this, where kids will go in the toilet and not lock it, because presumably their parents have said, don't lock it.
Yep.
But then you go striding in and push open a cubicle, and you're like, am I a paedophile now? Oh, no, I am so sorry. And then you're just like... I don't want to open. I'm not a paedophile, but you know, there's that thing where
that's not a thing I thought you'd have to clarify on this show.
No, when you push open a toilet door and you're like, great, now I've seen a child piss.
I have a question. Did you see the child go in? Was their intent?
No, I did follow them the whole way. But what I do when my niece goes in, I stand outside the door. I'll tell her not to lock it, but I'll stand outside, because I'm just like, I don't want anyone walking, like, she doesn't care, but I'm like, I don't want anyone walking in and you having a wee either. I'm very, very protective.
Yeah, people play it loose and fast with the old kids on trains.
Yeah, can't be doing it.
I once had, actually, I was going to moan about it, but it was truly one of the best train experiences I've ever had, which was that I was coming back from Newcastle on the train, and this woman got on with three children, one of whom was fresh out the oven, newly baked, and she had all of these children and was trying to feed them and trying to take care. Anyway, she said, can you hold the baby? And I was like, yes, I can hold it. I would be honoured. Anywho, she gives me this beautiful baby and she was like, do you want me to take her back?
Mm-hmm.
But obviously had so much to do and looked exhausted that I was like, I can hold her if you like.
Uh-huh.
Greatest. To be fair, longer than I expected, 4 hours of my life. The first two, I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
The second two, I was like, my arms are dead. And actually, I'm not sure I'm ready to be a mother. But still a joy.
I would have freaked out.
I lived with someone who had toilet anxiety. Now I'm thinking about toilets.
Wow.
And I did not think it was a real thing at the time, but now I'm thinking about it, I was like, no, it probably was.
I have quite a lot of toilet related anxiety.
I think it's quite a common thing.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. You know how, like, in uni houses, it tends to be a big ground floor bedroom and then everyone else upstairs.
Yeah.
We were one boy, three girls, and she said, he's going to have to go downstairs because I genuinely will not be able to use the toilet if I know there's a boy on, like, who's within listening distance. And she could not use a toilet if she knew there was a lad nearby.
Wow. Wow, like, it sounds like
genuine
she has boy anxiety.
Physically couldn't go to the toilet. And at first we were like, he'll take the downstairs bedroom. You don't need to invent a backstory. But no, it was a genuine...
I get
so
it.
If he was upstairs, she wouldn't... Like, say if he'd come upstairs for something, she wouldn't use the toilet.
I definitely could not go to the loo if people were queuing. Absolutely not. I'll just leave it. I see a queue, I'm like, no, thank you. You know, sometimes people will be like, we both need to go to the toilet. You go ahead. I'll just wait here. And they wait outside the door. Are you mad? No.
Mm-hmm.
I've now said crazy and mad. I've counted three times on the show and I feel like you're going to have some complaints and I apologise. I know that those are serious words. But yeah, I can't cope with people outside the loo.
I'm like,
why would you do that?
I'm an angel. I always put the hand dryer on when I leave in case there's anyone sitting waiting
Queen.
For a poo.
Queen. That's a real, that's a generous move.
I get
move.
Annoyed when girls don't do it back.
I completely
and I'm like,
agree.
Come on, you've not seen this toilet door open in 6 minutes. You know what I'm waiting to do.
Just put the hand dryer on.
Put a hand dryer on.
Agreed.
Any boys, do it too.
That's absolute
I'm
courtesy.
The greatest, aren't
well
I?
Done. That's actually very.
I am. But a mental health advocate.
Yeah, it's very important. Very important. Yeah, I mean, the stress of it. It's all too much.
Yeah.
I was going to give more advice on toilets than I thought. You know what? No.
I think we should steer away from toilets.
Yeah, I think I was
quickly.
Like, no one needs to hear
wrap it.
10 minutes of toilet chat.
Our last question before we all go to the toilet.
Yeah. Alone. Yes.
While not waiting for each other and with no children. If you could go back to your... You were right, Aaron.
Really tickled me that day for some reason. That was really funny.
Thank you. That's why I'm here.
She's actually very funny. What a surprise.
You
comedian Lauren
Hanson. And then every now and then I tell a joke. If you could go back to your younger self and give yourself some advice on mental health and living without misery, what would you tell yourself?
I mean, based on everything we just said, and actually I think probably on a broader scale, it would be good for me to have done something that I would have failed at on a more frequent basis. I think that would have changed an awful lot in my life, actually. But I think, yeah, maybe like take up a sport. Is that a weird answer? Like,
no.
Be bad at something on a consistent basis and learn to lose.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also learn to be like just learn to have good days and bad days. Mm-hmm. I think that was, I couldn't cope with that. And I think that is something that you can learn. And thankfully I have learned, and I'm still learning, but I think that it would have been nice to learn it at a younger age.
Definitely.
And probably good for me. I think I would have been a better sport and probably a less obnoxious class member had I occasionally not being the best at everything, because I really was without compassion or empathy for people who were not academic in school, which I now can see in retrospect. I imagine I was an absolute nightmare to be in class with. I honestly was either answering the question or waiting for other people to stop answering the question so that I could answer the question. I was a nightmare.
Did you get annoyed at slow readers?
Oh, you better believe I did.
Oh, we would have been such good friends.
And we would
actually
have been
we probably
nightmare.
Would have hated each other. Yeah.
We would have been vile. Can you imagine the two of us? Nobody, no school needs two of us. Absolutely not. No thanks. I spent a lot of time worrying as a kid, like an awful lot of time worrying, and I wish maybe the sports thing would have helped too, but like just to be a bit more of a kid.
Mm.
I feel like
that's a really good one.
Letting me do that now. But yeah, I think I wasn't. I was unwell, of course. So I know that that's, I don't know if I could have changed that massively, but I do just think when I look back at this weird little girl reading all her books, dusting her books, tidying her room, freaking out when people made her bed because it wasn't made to the exact standards. And I don't know if I could have changed that, but I wish she would go and play. Maybe that's what I would say.
That's a lovely one.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks,
Cheers.
Guys.
We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences, we can help each other know that things do get better. Thank you so much for joining us and listening to another episode. If anything has affected you that we've spoken about today, or you just need to talk, then the Calm Helpline is there for you. It's free and it's anonymous. Keeping on with the thank yous, thank you so much again for listening. I've thanked you once, but I'm so grateful I'll thank you twice. Big thanks to Catherine Bohart for being such a pleasure to talk to and to learn from, to everyone at Dave and Calm for letting us do this, and of course to Aaron for being the captain that steers this big old mental health boat on track, even while I cause mischief. I shall bring you a hat and an eye patch, Aaron. We'd love it if you could share, spread the word, drop us a nice review or rating, whatever you need to do to get this podcast in more people's ears. We would really appreciate that. See you next week. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.